You're listening to Clinical Conversations from the NEJM Group. I'm Joe Elia. Our guest this time is Dr. Andrew T. Chan, senior author of new research on the effects of gluten-restricted diets and their effects on coronary risk. It's just been published in the BMJ. Dr. Chan is with the Clinical and Translational Epidemiology Unit at Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard Medical School and the Division of Gastroenterology at MGH. Welcome, Dr. Chan.
Thanks for having me.
You know, almost anyone preparing a dinner party or going out to a restaurant these days is likely to hear the word gluten dropped at some point. How has it made its way into the culture?
Well, yeah, I think that's definitely true. And I think that largely stems from a growing understanding that celiac disease is under-recognized, and there are people who do have serious allergies to gluten. As a result, people have started to understand that gluten can be harmful in the setting of people that do have celiac disease. But I think what's happened is that gluten has now been broadened to be sort of a harmful factor for anyone. I think the notion that gluten is harmful has been extended to people that don't have celiac disease, which has, I think, led to many people assuming that if they avoid or minimize gluten, that they'll have better health. So I think it's become a situation where we've kind of, you know, done a service in terms of promoting the fact that gluten is something to consider if you have celiac, but that's all been sort of twisted in a lot of people's minds in terms of who is, who isn't sensitive to gluten.
Yeah. So let me take a crack at describing your research, and I'll abbreviate it. You looked at coronary disease risks in two large cohorts of clinicians, the Nurses' Health Study and the Health Professionals Follow-Up Study, together consisting of over 100,000 subjects. The members filled out food frequency questionnaires every 4 years over the course of about 25 years. And from the data, you were able to estimate gluten consumption over that period. And you excluded people from the data who had celiac disease. And you took that data and you divided the cohorts into fifths by gluten consumption. Is that fair?
Yes. So we took advantage of the fact that we carefully characterized the dietary habits of these two large health professional cohorts, and so they've been giving us very detailed information on their usual habits in terms of what they've been eating, and then in turn took that information to estimate the amount of gluten that they consumed, because we're able to, you know, use our knowledge of, you know, what foods have gluten to sort of create formulas to do that for individuals, and then in turn took the distribution of gluten in the population and divided it up into sort of low, medium, high gluten eaters, you know, into quintiles of gluten consumers, and then looked at the data with respect to how did high gluten consumers compare, for example, with low gluten consumers and their risk of developing heart disease.
So tell us what you found and what surprised you in your findings.
Well, what we found was that if you compare the group of men and women who consume the most gluten to those that consume the least amount of gluten, you actually found that they had a lower incidence of heart disease when you don't consider adjusting or controlling for other factors. And what was remarkable was that this lower incidence of heart disease, though, wasn't attributable. First of all, what's surprising is that it wasn't associated with a higher risk of heart disease, which is what you would assume if gluten really were harmful to people that were non-celiac. But that also, you know, any potential benefit of gluten was actually primarily driven by the high correlation between intake of whole grains with gluten-containing foods, which makes a lot of sense. If you think about, you know, what we get a lot of our gluten from in the diet, it's from, you know, breads and cereals, et cetera, that may have a lot of whole grains. So if you actually adjust for control for whole grain intake, there was no association of gluten with the risk of heart disease. So I think what this means is that people who limit their gluten intake also may be, you know, unknowingly limiting their intake of whole grains, which does we know associate with improved cardiac benefits. And so the potential benefits of whole grains are lost if you really are overly restrictive in terms of your gluten intake.
You did adjusting, as you said, for refined grains. And that was a corner in the paper that as I was turning it, I got a little confused. So if you wouldn't mind, let me reveal my own ignorance here. Can you explain it to me simply how adjusting for refined grains led you to believe that whole grains were the protective factor?
Right. So I think the sort of simplest way to think about it is that if you sort of divide up grains in general into two categories, refined grains and whole grains, we know that whole grains have cardiac benefits, and then refined grains tend not to. It actually may lead to cardiac harm.
Mm-hmm.
What we do know is if you think about, you know, grains being in those two broad buckets, when you do an analysis, for example, gluten or bread in relationship to heart disease, and then you also incorporate or try to control for the effect of refined grains, what's actually left in the equation is whole grains, and that kind of gives you the overall association of whole grains. So it's really a way to kind of model these different contributions to, you know, what is comprised in someone's diet. And you can, when you model, put things into the model, what's left is sort of what you assume to be the contributing factor.
Okay. All right. So adjusting, when you adjust for processed grains, what's left are the whole grains, and you're thinking, your hypothesis is that those are having the beneficial effect.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
And
what we found that, you know, the overall association, the lower risk of heart disease associated with gluten, really was eliminated when you actually control for whole grains. Meaning, if you take out the association of whole grains from that equation, what's left is refined grains, and that's not associated with heart disease risk. Actually, there's no association.
Okay. You noted that the proportion of people trying to cut down on gluten consumption encompasses about a third of the population these days.
Yeah, that's been really, I think, one of the remarkable stories of American dietary habits. I think if you just survey a broad swath of the U.S. population, you will find that a lot of people really are conscious about their gluten intake. And I think, again, that's largely been because there's been a growing awareness that gluten is something you find in your food and has been associated with harm in celiac patients. And so I think, you know, even though most people, the vast majority of the population are not celiac patients, I think the automatic assumption is if they limit it as well, that they will, you know, enjoy health benefits.
Mm-hmm. And people who are not necessarily people with celiac disease but have gluten sensitivity, are those people wisely avoiding gluten, do you think?
Yeah, that's another question, which is, I think, very important for the field, because we do understand that there clearly are people who have celiac disease that have a clear allergy to gluten and have a clear sort of pathophysiologic mechanism by which gluten harms their body. We know that it causes inflammation, causes problems with the gut, causes problems with food absorption, et cetera. So we do know that people with celiac have this very real damage to their small intestine and gluten.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a population of people that are known as sort of gluten-sensitive individuals who, for whatever reason, develop the symptoms of gluten allergy, and in some cases may have some signs of damage,
mm-hmm.
But don't meet formal criteria for celiac disease. They don't have the antibodies. They don't develop these sort of telltale signs of immune disruption that are found in celiac. That's a group of patients that we don't understand very well, and it's a group of patients for whom we don't really know what are the ramifications of a gluten-free diet, other than knowing that if they abstain from gluten, they feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I think at least in clinical gastroenterology, I think we feel like those are the patients for whom gluten restriction is advised because it does make them feel better.
Yeah.
Whether it actually is associated with other health benefits, I think we don't know.
Okay. Well, would it be fair to characterize the dangers of avoiding gluten in the absence of celiac disease or gluten sensitivity? Would those dangers be small but not inconsiderable?
The dangers of...
Of avoiding gluten?
Yeah, I mean, I think that...
Yeah.
I would say that that would be true. I think one of the issues really with avoiding or any restricted diet is what's missing, right, in that diet. And depending on how much is missing of a certain nutrient or certain food group, that is potentially associated with harm. And that harm can vary in terms of small harm or large harm, depending on sort of how much of it is missing.
Okay. And my final question is, what should clinicians do differently as a result of your findings? What would you like to see happen out in the clinics?
Well, I think as clinicians, we all have seen patients come into our office and tell us, you know, I'm, you know, going gluten-free, or I'm doing such and such a diet because, you know, my friend, my neighbor, et cetera, told me it was helpful, or because I saw it on TV, et cetera. So there is really a lot of dietary information that's being promoted in the lay press, and by the food industry, quite frankly, who, you know, obviously is touting gluten-free products, very, very, vigorously. So there's a barrage of dietary information that our patients are getting, and sometimes they come into the office and tell us, and, you know, oftentimes it's kind of easy to gloss over that and not really consider whether that's something to counsel their patients about, because, you know, it may not be something that you are that aware of. But I think it's important for clinicians to understand that you should probably check in with your patients and make sure that they're doing that, understanding why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Are they doing it because they think they're going to improve their long-term health? And if they are doing it, are they also being restricted in a way where they are potentially limiting their diet from intake of things that we know to be healthy, like whole grains? So I think it's important for clinicians to really understand that some of these diets and these bad diets can have negative health consequences, and we should probably probe our patients a little bit more about what exactly they're doing and the reasoning for doing it.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Chan, for spending time with us today.
My pleasure.